This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, you're listening to The Morning Run, 7:36 right now. I'm Melissa Idris with Julian Ng and Tan Chung Han. We're taking a look at the top business news of the day. Of course, the US Federal Reserve is in focus because they finally pulled the trigger. They have raised their benchmark interest rate by 0.25%, the third time they've done so in a decade since the financial crisis of 2008. And I guess it's a reflection that perhaps employment is now at a healthier level and inflation is starting to increase there.
Yes, Janet Yellen is looking for a stronger economy and they want to resume a normal trend rate. That's what they call it, to 2% from the range of 0.75% to 1% right now. Stock markets in the U.S. rose yesterday. This goes against the historical trends that when interest rate rises, this is bad for equity markets. But yesterday was an indication perhaps that investors are focusing more on economic recovery rather than the fact that interest rates are bad for stocks.
Well, I think also the other message that Wall Street is getting is that, you know, yes, the Fed is sticking to their storyline, that script, right? And from their previous meeting back in December, they had initially signaled a more hawkish stance for 2017. And sure enough, here we are, just what, 3 months from their previous rate hike back in December, March, they have hiked it again. So obviously, looking forward, you've got a few more meetings here. Say the next one coming up in May, so that is 6 more meetings scheduled for this year. So now people are already starting to look ahead. How many more rate hikes can the Fed price in? 2, 3 more?
Right. Well, okay. So what does this mean for the average American Joe who has a bank deposit, right? With higher interest rates, does that mean they'll be getting more for the money that they're saving?
Unfortunately, not, because the savings accounts won't benefit in the short term. So pensioners and savers shouldn't hold their breath. And there are two reasons for this. Firstly, by raising short-term lending rates by the Feds, the banks would take advantage of that to not raise deposit rates so that they can have a higher profit margin. And secondly, they have too much deposits. So they don't need to get the extra deposits by raising rates, and they're not lending out awfully much anyway. That might change if the economy strengthens. But right now, the loan-to-deposit ratio is at 72% compared to 92% 10 years ago. In terms of the amount of deposits that they have today, it's almost $13 trillion, which is 65% higher than a decade ago. So not so fast for pensioners and savers to benefit from the interest rate rises.
Yeah, then also to extend the question then to Malaysians, right, those listening to this right now, how does this affect us? You know, why are we talking about this? Well, obviously, you know, with the U.S. being the biggest economy in the world, we have to look at it. But at the same time, this could, have a feed-through effect into the forex market, essentially how much the ringgit is valued, right? So we have to wait and see when markets open whether the ringgit will still maintain its recent range-bound nature of about 4.45 to the dollar, or will we see, a further weakening in the ringgit?
I think the market wisdom would be that with rate rises coming out of the States, a lot more funds flows can be expected to go back to the US dollar, and therefore perhaps some strengthening of the US dollar. But also the positive tone that's coming out of Janet Yellen and the US in general has to be tempered a little bit by talks of protectionism by Donald Trump. Already China is warning Donald Trump, and they're going to have a meeting at the beginning of April, Donald Trump meeting Li Keqiang, and Li Keqiang has fired the first shot saying that protectionism is bad. Let's not get into a trade war because that's going to be bad all around for everybody.
Well, that's going to be an interesting meeting, isn't that? I mean, imagine being a fly on the wall in that meeting.
Yeah, I mean, imagine like we have today, we are confronted with this scenario where China is the flag bearer for globalization. You know what I mean?
For global trade.
Yeah, for global trade. You know, it's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And there's one more fear as well as to whether the existing European elections that are going to happen would nudge the EU closer to a breakup. So that there is that because of the rise of right-wing populism that's spreading around Europe right now. But there was a sigh of relief yesterday because in the Dutch elections, the incumbent party came out leading on exit polls, and everybody in Europe right now, at least for now, breathing a sigh of relief.
Yeah, but it's not going to be, we're not going to know the final results anytime soon. I think these were just initial exit polls. We were just talking earlier this morning, Han, about how this could be a long and protracted process. Simply the act of counting the votes now will be done manually because the Netherlands is afraid of doing it electronically for fear of Russian hackers.
Yeah, no, but at the same time...
it's true, it's true. They're doing it manually, Jules.
Yeah, no. taking lesson from another country.
Yeah, exactly. So it's China and Putin, you know, China and Russia, you know, basically dominate or pulling the strings when it comes to how the world moves here. But then real quick, though, going back to what Julian just mentioned just now, yet the fact that we are talking about the rise of populism in the Netherlands, in France, in Europe, you know, may signal that this is a paradigm shift, though, you know, fine, they may not have gotten the kind of votes, at least according to early exit polls, from this round, but, you know, he himself has promised what the Dutch version of Donald Trump has said, this is not the last you have seen of me. So, you know, this wave of populism might just be starting right now.
Well, yesterday we spoke about Cathay Pacific and how it was set to post its worst full-year performance for 2016. Now that they've announced the results, well, that's turned out to be true. Cathay's net loss totaled $74 million in 2016. And looking at their sales figures, it dropped about 10%. After this news, the shares fell 1.4% in Hong Kong trade yesterday.
So there are all these very dire reports coming out saying that Hong Kong has too few people to support Cathay Pacific and who can afford to pay the kind of premium prices that Cathay Pacific is instituting. And perhaps Cathay can take a leaf out of Mars's playbook where Malaysian Airlines refuses to pigeonhole themselves into either a full-service carrier or a budget carrier. They take advantage of whatever hybrid system works. Now, there are only 7.3 million people in Hong Kong, but China has over a billion people, and there are 48 other airlines in China. It's not hard for anybody to see that if you wanted to book ticket in Hong Kong, you can go to China as well. There are 48 other offers out there.
Yeah, no, at the same time, you know, looking at Cathay Pacific themselves, you know, yesterday, Melissa, we spoke about this, you know, how some analysts had perhaps said this would be their smallest profit in 8 years, but now it turns out to be a loss. You know, it's actually a net loss here. You know, at the same time, their woes are just compounded. If you look at, say, Bloomberg's World Airlines Index, Cathay Pacific is Asia's worst performer there. You know, and these kind of movements, you know, in the Cathay Pacific's numbers really then begs the question surrounding the future of their CEO, Ivan Chu, right? Because according to media reports, their recent CEOs have only lasted about 3 years or so. Ivan Chu has been in the hot seat for about 3 years. So with this first net loss in 8 years, you know, will Ivan Chu stay?
But it's not just competition, you know, you guys. It's mistakes coming from Cathay as well. They really lost a lot of money hedging fuel, and they made a wrong bet, and there you go, they've lost about, I think, 8.5 billion Hong Kong dollars last year. So they're expecting more hedging losses this year, although that should be lower.
And also they're scrapping dividends, second half dividends. They warned that the year ahead may not be good. So I think investors of Cathay Pacific would be crying foul on this loss of dividends.
Yeah, also reading the market commentary post the Cathay's results announcement, but here's something I find fascinating. Cathay, in order to turn a profit, they'll have to sell more. They have to put more bums on seats than they have actually seats. So more than 100%. I mean, that's crazy. How do you even do that?
Double up the bums.
Right. So, like two people in one seat, perhaps, you know, and pay the same price. Well, no, so there's talks about having to perhaps raise ancillary income, you know, something that Air Asia has done really well, you know, or finding other streams of revenue for them to turn a corner. Yes, like Julian pointed out, it has been done. We are seeing that with Malaysia Airlines. We saw that with Qantas. Remarkable turnaround there. They are not in as close proximity to China. So China is certainly a big, big factor when it comes to Cathay's fortunes here.
7:45 right now. We'll be back with a look at the local business scene after this, right here on The Morning Run, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.